Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get infographics, comprehensive show notes,
relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
So this is the free enterprise education model. And so again, the reason I bring it up is I think if people can see what was really possible, that they could get excited and get behind that. Again, all we know is this K through 12 university style where you get the diploma, you get the degree, you know, you go to school August to May from, you know, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And I think people need to see what it could be like without that. So if we were to create a vacuum, what would fill that in from free market forces? So we'll start here at the top.
Hi, friends. This is Brett. Welcome back to the School Sucks podcast. Today is Wednesday, May 26th, and I'm very excited to bring you this presentation. So a young man reached out to me last week. His name was Noah Blaylock. So I see him on Instagram. I say, here's a very young man. What's he up to? Turns out he's 24 years old, and he has started a new podcast that is called The Noah Blaylock Show. The description, I'm going to read it to you. The free market can provide a solution to the atrocious education in the United States. Free market education would be superior in every single regard, academically, financially, affordability, universality, culturally, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and so on. In conjunction with my assertions, I will be exposing the absolute failure and disaster that government control of education has been for children, parents, teachers, taxpayers, and society as a whole. Kabam! Love this guy. Now, Brett, being old and wise, do you advise young Noah about the distinction between schooling and education? I certainly do. I slip it into the conversation, no problem. And after first encountering on Instagram and seeing that he was quite young, which I've mentioned now a few times, and I will also mention that more when we talk, you're about to hear that, I become very interested in his story. So he asks if he can interview me. I say, we are going to do what is called a swap cast. We're going to interview each other. And he also wanted to talk a little bit about John Taylor Gatto. But there were a few twists and turns. There were a few unexpected things. You're going to know what I'm talking about as you listen to the show. So we didn't get into the seven lesson school teacher discussion. And I said to him, let's do a whole part two where we focus primarily on John Taylor Gatto's seven lesson school teacher. And that's something that was a guide for me very early on in developing the message and the mission of School Sucks. I distilled the seven-lesson school teacher to three hidden lessons, which were obedience, conformity, and apathy. Gatto's seven lessons were confusion, class position, indifference, emotional dependency, intellectual dependency, provisional self-esteem, and the idea that one can't hide. You are always being surveilled. The idea that you would have privacy is absurd. So, obedience covers emotional dependency, intellectual dependency, and the idea that one can't hide. Conformity covers provisional self-esteem, class position, and confusion. And apathy covers the third of Gatto's seven lessons, indifference. And Noah and I will reconvene within the next few weeks, and we will not only talk about Gatto's seven lessons, my three hidden lessons, but we'll also talk about some of the remedies that we've been talking about on School Sucks for all these years now. I'm also excited to remind you, not next week, but the week after, June 7th and 8th, Nathan Fraser and I are going to be hosting the Mindset and Mastery Virtual Summit. You can learn more about what we've put together at mindsetandmastery.com. But it's going to be about 3 hours each day, 2 hours of presentation, and then about an hour of discussion and Q&A after. Day one will focus on the harmful programs that have been installed externally and internally that many of us are not quite free of yet. Now, obviously, it's going to differ from person to person, but we'll spend the first hour or so talking about those inner programs that run, those self-limiting beliefs, coping mechanisms, bad habits. So day one is very much going to be like an audit of the suboptimal programs that are still inside our psyche. You know they're there. I'm sorry, but you know they're there. And an hour on outer programs. And this is, like I've said before, a merger of the best work we have done at School Sucks, both on personal development topics and on intellectual and emotional self-defense topics. That being said, day two focuses on the installation of new, beneficial, replacement programs for those suboptimal ones. And that is going to be a tremendous amount of fun. In fact, Nathan and I have been working on putting together little appetizer videos for people who enroll. We're going to be sending those out to you next week. Little tips, things you can do before you even come to the summit that are easy to implement and will improve your life. I mean, that's the tone and the purpose of this whole summit. But we're going to give some stuff away ahead of time to the people who enroll. A kind of appetizer for some of the things that we're going to be covering in this summit. And of course, the summit is part of a larger project that we're hoping to launch in the fall. But we have up to 100 spots. I'm not sure how many right now are left, but there is still room. Please go to Mindset and Mastery and take 5 to 10 minutes to just read through what we're putting together, the problem that we're aiming to solve, how we're aiming to solve it. And I know there are hundreds, if not thousands, of you out there that would really, really benefit from this presentation. Unfortunately, we only have, like I said, 100 spots. So mindsetandmastery.com. And we hope to see you there. We hope to interact with you on those days, June 7th, June 8th. Set aside 3 daytime hours if you are in the United States or Canada. Are you in Canada? I'm sorry, that place is stupid. Oh, wait, the United States is stupid now, too. Oh, the entire world is stupid. Well, come to our little corner of it where things are cool. You know, we hope to see you there. Okay, here is my conversation with Noah Blaylock. His podcast is The Noah Blaylock Show. You can find that on all your podcatchers. You can also follow him on Instagram. I was going through his Instagram and I said, this looks like an interesting young man. I want to learn more about him. And I did, and you're about to hear that. Just search Noah Blaylock, or his actual Instagram name is AbolishGovEd. And also, I was trying to jog my memory and remember the audiobook version of The Underground History of American Education. The show is Unwelcome Guests. I got the name right, read by Lynn Geary. But I will put a link to that audiobook download in the show notes. If any of you didn't know, there was a whole audiobook version of The Underground History of American Education, and it's free. That is linked in the show notes as well. And you know what? Another reason why you need to visit the show notes is Noah created this infographic. This was actually a nice surprise later on in the conversation. It was actually what I created the title of the show around, this model of how free enterprise education could work and how multifaceted it actually is. Now, he and I have come at this problem from slightly different angles, as you're going to hear in the conversation, but I feel like this is a very, very useful resource because he's new and I'm old in this, you know, what is real education and what is the problem with government schooling podcasting scene. I offer him some advice and I say, look, this thing that you put together is great. You can build a lot of content around that. But I wanted everybody to take a look at it. Feel free to shoot Noah some advice, some feedback, some expansions. If you see anything in or you see anything missing from his infographic, it is the cover art for the show. And it is also visible in the show notes as well. So I certainly admire the mission of getting government out of education. We'll talk about that in the conversation as well. Thank you so much for listening. Again, mindsetandmastery.com. Please check it out. If it's right for you, we'll see you there. Here we go.
Something I'm wanting to add later on, maybe at my year mark or something, is I've been asking my guests to, prior to going into the episode, just to record a tagline that I can throw in later, like, hi, I'm Brett, and I'm the guy who does the School Sucks podcast, and you're listening to the Noah Blaylock Show. Would you mind, like, saying that? Are you okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'd love to do that. You want me to do that right now?
Yeah, just your full name and then whatever title you see fit.
All right. Tell me if you like this. If not, I'll do it again.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Brett Vinat, the host of the School Sucks podcast, and you're listening to the Noah Blaylock Show.
Perfect.
Oh, what a professional.
Looks like you've had some practice with that.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready to just jump into it?
Yeah, let's just get to know each other on the show. That's how I like to do it.
All right.
You can start because you invited me.
Okay. Well, this is only my sixth episode, I think, so I'm still kind of newer at this. But I guess I want to let my audience kind of get to know you. You told us that you're hosting and created the School Sucks Project podcast. So tell us what that is for people who have no idea.
Sure. Yeah. I started the School Sucks podcast, and then that kind of expanded into the School Sucks Project, which included an online community and a YouTube channel and a Twitter account and an Instagram account. But I started the podcast all the way back in 2009, just as kind of the most reliable means that I could find at the time to get my voice out there and vent about a lot of the frustrations and realizations I was having about my career, which was in, I try not to misspeak and say education because like there's a real distinction between education and schooling.
Yeah.
At the time that I started the show, I ran a tutoring company and I thought we were doing educational work. This was 2009. I was a young man. I'm guessing still older than you are now, but much younger than I am now. And I had come to that from working with like kids who were in a boarding school, kids from really like distressed backgrounds, kids who had a lot of emotional problems, but also like learning disabilities. And I had gone on to work in the greater Boston area, which was very wealthy, a lot of like Ivy League bound kids. And I was seeing a lot of the same problems. You mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit about John Taylor Gatto today, and I think that was one of his insights in The Seven Lessons School Teacher and elsewhere, that, you know, he said these kinds of lessons, this kind of indoctrination or training is happening in all kinds of environments. And it might take slightly different shapes and have slightly different flavors, but all kids are educated to a kind of limitation, right? It is not about reaching their full potential intellectually, creatively, in terms of self-actualization, or even setting somebody, it's hard to self-actualize by the time you're 17 or 18 years old, I would say, but even being on the proper course towards such a thing. Yeah, I found that even though I went to drastically different populations, from being a self-contained classroom special ed teacher to a high school level history and math teacher, onto trying to help kids get into, you know, some of the best colleges in the country and get, you know, was the SAT? I think the SAT had just gone to like 2,400 points instead of 1,600 like it was when I took it. So trying to help kids get 2,200, 2,300, 2,400 on the SATs, and realizing that emotionally and intellectually, kids possessed the same problems in both environments. So I sat through a lot of school meetings around, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009. I was super frustrated by how I had to like clam up and not share my true feelings. It was around this time that I was discovering Gatto and people like him. I think my first encounter with Gatto was maybe my first meaningful encounter with Gatto. I ran into some of his work when I was in college, but my first meaningful encounter was like 2006. And once I heard that, it kind of set me down this path of discovery. There was a lot of new media, the emerging online alternative media. So there were a lot of voices saying a lot of iconoclastic things at the time. And I was drinking that up at a considerable volume and feeling pretty rebellious. And, you know, it became more difficult day by day and week by week to kind of go along, to get along and keep my mouth shut doing that. So the School Sucks podcast started as just a way to feel better about myself and to, I don't know, maybe I might not have used this language at the time, but like find some integrity. Right. Like if I can't say these things because I'll lose my job, maybe I could say these things to even more people behind the back of my job. Yeah. And I was like one of the principals in this company, too. I was the vice president of the company that I worked for. And it was risky business. I mean, it was the chances of being doxxed or outed back then were much more slim than they are today.
But, you know, there was this thing in New Hampshire called the Free State Project. Lots of people involved in the Free State Project, which was a libertarian movement, became aware of and promoters of the School Sucks podcast. So there was actually one dude who was putting up like flyers and putting bookmarks in education and psychology and philosophy books in the libraries in the towns where I was tutoring. And in one of these libraries, a bookshelf collapsed, raining School Sucks bookmarks down all over the library. Was one of the greatest. So then there were these stories, like these people didn't understand guerrilla marketing apparently, because they wrote news stories about we're having to take all of these bookmarks out of the library. And this is, I don't remember if it was front page news in a couple of the big New Hampshire newspapers, but it was press for us. And I was sure right there that the jig was up, that I was going to be found out as the host of the School Sucks podcast while I am the vice president of top tier academic consulting with two very contrasting kinds of messages. So, you know, we grew from there. I made some good alliances with larger platforms. And after about a year of doing the show, I decided we needed to take a more constructive tone. You could only say so much about why school sucked. And if school sucks, then and school is not education, then we need to start talking about what education really is. So even though we have to go back to that well and revisit, you know, like, this is your enemy. These are the people trying to stop educational freedom. I've done that with Brian Kaplan, who I know has been on your show. I've done that with Corey DeAngelis, who I would definitely recommend for your show. Oh, Corey is a warrior. What's that?
I was just saying I've seen his stuff and, you know, I don't, of course, agree with all his views, but I think he's doing a great thing.
Yeah. So it's good that he's kind of getting that word out there and getting a lot of traction with it. I know he does really well on Twitter and Facebook. So, and that'd be an interesting conversation, especially if you don't agree with, you know, all of his positions. That would be very cool. But let's see, why did I bring that up? So yeah, you have to kind of return to the problem of school to remind people why you're doing what you're doing. But I've really tried to make the show more about educational alternatives, personal development, and what, you know, real critical thinking and learning look like. So that's pretty much made up the project over the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know that your podcast has gotten lots of views and you've had people reach out to you. I want people listen to the show to know that, you know, you've been having success with what you're doing. You know, give us a story, let us know one of the outcomes of your podcast so far so people can see that you're doing a good thing.
I wish I had kept a count of how many people told me, my children will never go to public school because of the work that you have done. Now, you hear that like five or six times, which was the case, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, I think I probably heard some version of that over 100 times. Now, if you think about how many hours that is, and this is just one example, but it's one that I'm particularly proud of, how many hours saved languishing in those classrooms, if every one of those parents could have two kids each. So let's just say it's 200 kids, right? And each one of those 200 kids is going to spend 15,000 hours in one of those classrooms, if not for the intervention of the School Sucks podcast, or, you know, maybe something else would have come along for that parent with the same information and they would have made a similar choice. But that was probably one of the most gratifying things that I've ever heard. It's a difficult thing to quantify, right? Like, you add up what all those hours mean, all those hours saved, and with those hours not just wasted in school, but repurposed towards self-directed education, how much enrichment does that add to those lives, to the lives of people touched by those lives? How much value does that ultimately put into the world? It's a very difficult thing to calculate and quantify. But, you know, I was up close and personal with lots of kids from variety of, you know, social and economic backgrounds, really, really struggling with the school environment and the academic pressures, like various things. So when I first started tutoring in 2006, when I left teaching and went to tutoring in the greater Boston area, it was the second appointment I had. The girl was a senior. I was there to do SAT tutoring with her, and her best friend had just committed suicide. And I was told that, you know, this was all very formative stuff. This was like 3 years before I started the podcast, but pressures of school, pressures of college upcoming, those kinds of things. Now, there's other probably, you know, mental health issues and surrounding factors. I don't want to put it all on school. Mm-hmm. But I know how difficult that experience can be. So just to think that, like, I know it sounds kind of cliche, but just to think that one person was liberated from that burden is very, very meaningful to me.
You know, you said it's cliche, but the truth is, even if it is, it's still true. I followed Jordan Peterson for a while now, and I just saw that he had an Instagram, so I followed it, and I was watching his story last night where, you know, people, he's talking about how people will attribute him as being this mean old nasty person. And he talks about how he lives in a very positive environment where he talks about people coming to him, talking about how their life might've been changed by following his advice, where they might be doing better, or at least their suffering has been reduced. And, you know, he's tearing up. He's saying, you know, I defy you to find me something more satisfying than making a difference in someone else's life. So, just pointing out that regardless of whether it's cliche or not, that it is a satisfying thing to hear someone else say, you made a difference in my life. It's a wonderful thing.
It is. And, what difference do they make with that difference? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a compounding effect. Maybe it's not a compounding effect, but kind like of a rippling effect of all the lives that they might touch living a better life for themselves. Is a really a pretty powerful thing to think about. So to know that the work that I do had some part in that is great, and it kept me motivated to keep doing this work and you know, to keep collecting those stories until now. So yeah, thanks for bringing that out of me. I don't think about that enough, so mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
And I think people do need to be reminded of the good they do. You know, you pointed out you wish you had kept a journal. I actually sometimes, because I've been you know, involved in speaking out politically a lot, you know, on social media with my friends, people know me as that kind of guy. And sometimes people will send me messages where they'll say, hey, thanks for standing up for that, you know, or they'll tell me they're glad to see someone else, you know, fighting for good things. And I got to tell you, words matter, because I screenshot those things. I save them in a file. And sometimes I go and look at that and it, you know, it's rejuvenating seeing, hey, other people are noticing this, and maybe I'm making a difference, even if it's not the biggest difference in the world. You know, it is good to be reminded of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I know you said you wanted to interview me, since, you know, you're going to be posting this on your podcast. This is the first time actually anyone's ever like wanted to interview me for something like this. So maybe I'll be a little rusty at this, but, you know, ask your questions, you know.
Well, yeah, it's my pleasure. Well, I was fascinated. You wrote to me on Instagram, and we talked back and forth a little bit. And your moniker on Instagram is Abolish Government Ed, right?
Abolish Ed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I kind of want to hear about, first of all, since we're looking at each other, can I guess your age?
Go for it.
20.
I'm 24.
24. Well, you look good. Taking care
Thank
of your
you.
Skin. I didn't know you'd made it all the way to 24. Wow. So, you're a young man. I'd be interested in hearing like what your story is and what's motivating you to pursue this project, both with like an Instagram presence, other social media presence, and the podcast.
Yeah, I suppose I've always kind of valued freedom. You know, for me, it started in middle school. I had a friend who was a little involved. His family was very political. They weren't like running for office or anything, but, you know, he talked about it, and I'd, you know, coming out of elementary school, I'd never really, you know, really considered the world of politics really. And, you know, he talked to me a little bit about it, and, you know, I was like, oh, this is some interesting stuff, this and that and the other. And so over the years, I got a little bit more into it. In high school, I had a government/economics teacher who kind of got me started a little. He gave me, I'm trying to think what it was. I think it's the 5,000 Year Leap by Cleon Skousen. Where it just talks about principles of freedom and limited government, you know, some basic stuff like that. But for me, you know, I had never really considered this stuff in that much depth before. And I read it, and I said, huh, this is some important stuff. Again, just kind of talking about my background and story. At the age of 18, I graduated high school. And then just a few months later, I went on a proselyting mission for my church. You've seen the guys walking around with the white shirt and ties and the name tags. I was one of those guys. So did that for 2 years and got back, went to college. I have been attending BYU Idaho, but recently moved down to Provo to attend Utah Valley University. And in my time in Rexburg, Idaho, attending BYUI, I got involved with a Turning Point USA chapter. Technically founded it anyways, was the president, I got involved with another organization that started up there, a small nonprofit called the Madison Liberty Institute. And they were kind of a clubhouse for all the different, you know, conservative groups, Turning Point USA, Young Americans for Liberty. And there were a few others. And so I got involved with that, you know, doing, I did a debate once. We did other activities. We hosted Will Witt coming to speak and a couple other things like that. So it's just something that's always interested me. And I think it's something people have the tendency to avoid. You know, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion and polite society, but it's those things that kind of really matter a lot, that kind of determine our lives, that change the course of history and our culture. And I think that those things need to have attention brought to them.
Yeah. And that's how like the big questions get answered, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also implicit in not talking about those things in polite society is like, well, those questions aren't for you to answer. Right. Somebody else will decide. Can I ask, this is something that's like a curiosity to me of like, I was raised with a faith and then kind of got away from it. And I'm always like open-minded, but not practicing. We'll leave it at that. How does your faith, just because this is something that's so, distant for me, how does that inform a lot of this political stuff or even your attitudes towards education? Because, you know, one of the things that like various religions get raked for is like teaching obedience. Certainly that was like, I was raised Catholic. Okay. So there is a lot of criticism of Catholicism and other, you know, other Judeo-Christian faiths for, preaching this kind of obedience to. Or maybe not even preaching. Maybe it's more implicit. So Do you think that you're maybe at odds with a lot of people in your faith? Or do you think that that helped inform this mission, for lack of a better word, that you've kind of gone on with this other stuff?
So I guess the faith does play a huge role in that. I'm an open book about that. I have no issues discussing it. You know, I went on 2 years ago to talk about it to people. Mm-hmm. And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints actually has a lot of pro-freedom teachings. A vast majority of the members are conservative-leaning. For example, every year we have two big conferences. We call them General Conference, in which the man who we believe to be a prophet of God, as well as the Quorum of the 12 Apostles and other church leaders, they come and they speak about, you know, different gospel topics, you know, faith, trusting the Lord, repentance, baptism, etc. And every now and then they do talk about political matters. Again, they're not advocating for a particular party or platform, but for example, this last April we had our general conference, and Elder Oaks, who is in the First Presidency, he's one of the counselors to the prophet. He talks about, I forget what the talk was named. It was something along the lines of defending our inspired Constitution. But there's been a lot of church leaders who've talked about this, how freedom is essential to God's plan, how we have a duty and an obligation to understand those things, to research them, and to defend them in the public space. And so for the most part, I'm not at odds with the teachings of my church or the members in it. There are, again, like in any faith, you're going to find people of all different leanings and persuasions. And there are definitely those, liberals, Democrats, left-leaning people in the church. But if you're looking at what the prophets and apostles and leaders in our church have said, you know, they talk about the Constitution is inspired. It doesn't mean that every single word was, you know, dictated by God, but it means he was leading the course of history. He inspired men to fight the American Revolution, to establish a world or a country, where freedom could abound and where men would be, free to follow the dictates of their own conscience and, exercise their agency to essentially draw closer, or again, to choose not to, to follow God and his commandments. And so I would say that the church and its teachings have had a profound effect on, like you said, what you said, for lack of better words, was this mission I'm on. And I think that our education system is doing a huge disservice in terms of religion, in terms of freedom, in terms of just purely educational matters, even in a secular sense. I think that our school systems have been a huge hindrance to that. Essentially, if I'm looking at where I can make the biggest difference, if I'm looking at the strengths God's given me and those things which interest me, I think I can make the biggest difference for the most amount of people by going in to try to influence the education system, or in my case, you know, try to get rid of what we currently know it as.
Yeah. So do you think you would be stronger trying to talk to people within the faith or beyond the faith? Or do you see any obstacles to communicating more broadly. And the reason why I ask is I certainly early on when I was much more belligerent about religion, and, you know, like it's something that I wasn't always so tolerant of, we'll just say. If you go back far enough in the show, you'll hear some real like hostility towards, you know, my upbringing as a Christian. Mm-hmm. We'll say, which is, I think, a typical thing that you know, a lot of Americans go through, certainly, or maybe people all over the world go through at some point in their lives. But, you know, I had this platform and I certainly talked about it, and I was surrounded by, you know, a lot of people who were atheists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also politically, we really like clarified a kind of libertarian position. And in the alternative education movement, a lot of people are of the left, like the Sudbury School, which is really like, you know, a strong promoter of self-directed learning. And they do a lot of really cool things. And it's, you know, an admirable model in many ways. Those people didn't want to talk to me. I kind of had an awkward and uncomfortable conversation at a Sudbury style school in Pennsylvania, where in a like a open forum that I was hosting with adults and students, the administrators of the school, who are like these old school lefties, kind of called me out for being critical of the Sudbury model and some of its like leftist political features. So It was hard to, and I'm not saying this wasn't, you know, of my own doing, and you know, my hostile tone early on was largely responsible for bridges that were burned. But yeah, there were alliances that I struggled to make that I felt like I could have been better served by making. So, you know, you're obviously talking about being of a faith that in American culture is looked at. I mean, there's no, you know, getting around it, like in popular culture, South Park has attacked. Yeah, I had a guy on my show. I was traveling across the country in 2017, and I went to Salt Lake City, and this guy, Paul, who was a former member of the church, did this. We did this kind of a skit where he tried to convert me to the faith. So you know that. There are, and this is true for basically all of Christianity in popular culture today, right? Like, religion is a fair target, right? And a lot of people don't have faith or have lost their faith, and you're in a unique position where people have also decided that your faith is an open target, and it has been. So, like, do you have you thought about, I'm just really curious about this, have you thought about like how that might inform your presentation, or how you might deal with like obstacles that you might encounter doing this kind of work?
In terms of other people taking issue with the fact that I intertwine my faith with my motives?
Well, here's the thing. If you are off script, right? We kind of, certainly in the last 14 months with what's gone on in this country, we know what the script is, and we see what can happen to people as far as, you know, bans and shadow bans, and, you know, even having their careers destroyed if they go off that script. So, Noah, as somebody who is off script, which in my opinion is the way to be, People are going to, let's say your presence expands. People are going to look for any reason they can to say, I don't need to listen to you, right? I always tell the story on my show where I got into an argument with somebody in my family. This was years ago. And I'm way over their head just because, like, this is the world that I inhabit, and I studied all this, like, school history stuff. So I'm way over their head on, like, the Prussian model of education and why schooling is indoctrination. And this person doesn't know what to do, but plenty smart person, but I'm, you know, they're just kind of, like, out of their area of expertise in this argument that we're having, and I have the upper hand because this is something that I know about. And they interrupt me, and they say, what do you think of Jenny McCarthy? Like, the anti-vaxxer, former Playboy model. As if to say, tell me you like Jenny McCarthy so I don't have to listen to anything else you say, right? Uh-huh. And I asked as much. I said, is that why you're asking me? Is that why you're interrupting to start this new subject about anti-vax Playboy model Jenny McCarthy?
Something that was totally disconnected.
Right. And the person said, yes, I think that's what I'm trying to do. It was kind of like enough of a pattern interruption that he kind of caught himself. So people might realize it. It might be conscious. It might be unconscious. But if you make people uncomfortable, they will try to character assassinate you by any means necessary.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So basically, how do I plan to deal with that, I guess?
Yeah, because I listened to a few of your shows, and I think you're, you know, you're a great voice. It seems like you've only done like maybe 6 or 7 episodes so far, right?
This is episode 6.
This is episode six. Okay. So you've already got Brian Kaplan on the show, which is great.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed my conversation with him too. But you're kind of off and running here, and you know, I want to... I'm wishing you success because obviously I'm not going to do this forever. And I like the fact that there are new and emerging voices who are talking about educational alternatives, educational freedom, the problem with public schooling as it currently exists, which is only getting worse.
Oh,
you know,
for
like
sure.
So many of the things that we talked about and we might have sounded like kooks warning about for the last decade. It's like I'm seeing kids in bubbles playing trombones and I'm wondering, do I even need to do this anymore? Right? School is doing this for me. Schools are putting out press releases. They're like, we put our kids in bubbles, right? We put our kids in plastic bubbles to play their instruments to keep them safe. It's almost a parody of itself at this point. So it's not like that situation is improving at all. So yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking like, I would like to see you grow. I think you're, if it's fair to say, like still kind of feeling your way out and kind of maybe figuring out what your brand is going to look like. But yeah. You know, I'm kind of on the other side. I'm kind of like more towards the end of what I'm doing. And yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, wondering like what your considerations, the one I just kind of talked about there with your faith, but what your other considerations are kind of looking out as the world as it is now and, you know, trying to figure out how to craft your message. So you can speak to any part of that you want.
Okay. Maybe I just tell you where I'm planning on going and how I hope to get there.
Sure. Yeah.
My lifelong goal. And, you know, I have people be like, oh, that's ambitious. Good luck with that, bud. You know, when I tell them is I want to abolish all government control of education. I'm talking federal. I'm talking state. I'm talking local. I'm talking funding. If it's education and if it's government, it's not touching it. I understand that's ambitious and that there's a lot to be done there. And how I think that could be achieved. Again, I'm open to changing my opinion based on new information, particularly in terms of achieving it. I think there's already enough movement and talk in the conservative libertarian space about getting the federal government out of education. There's plenty of people who agree on that. So I think if that can be achieved first, what would then need to happen is an aggressive campaign of, again, for lack of a better word, propaganda on perhaps one state. For example, if you talk to a conservative about gun control, he might bring up the example of Houston versus Chicago. He'll talk about the differences. He'll talk about how they're similar in demographic, population, how they're comparable. But then they'll talk about the difference in gun laws and what the results are and how gun control doesn't really work. And if you ask someone who's talking about this, including myself, you might say, okay, can you name those specific gun laws? Can you tell me exactly when it was enacted, what the exact policies were? Probably not. But, you know, they've seen the results is essentially what I'm getting at. So I think that if we get one or two states to do free market education, to again get the state out of it completely, I think that the results will speak for themselves, and hopefully from there it will grow.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think that government education is going to be around as long as the government is around. You know, like it is the golden egg laying goose in many respects. And yeah, this was a conversation that we had in New Hampshire where, you know, a big part of this like libertarian movement, the Free State Project, was political. And we entertained questions like, let's just say it was pinned down to a district. How many kids would need to withdraw in that district for the district to not be able to justify their funding anymore? And, you know, I've always stayed away from the politics. Like in the very, very early episodes of my show, I say I'm not pursuing any kind of conversation about reform. Nor am I still. Like I would, if somebody was involved in the school reform scene, I would definitely talk to them. I've certainly talked to people who share what you describe there as kind of your mission is getting like, let's get the federal government out of it first and then see what we could do state by state. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for that. I'm all for incrementalism. I've, you know, seeing the costs, having my ear to the street of this world for the last decade, and not to mention people sending me articles about all these horrors all the time. Like, I've adapted kind of away from my purism about this, that like, oh, everybody needs to be in these unschooled, self-directed education environment. And like, let's put all options on the table. Let's see what can work. Let's do the state as laboratory kind of thing. Let's try charters. I mean, I was against charter schools. I was against vouchers just because of, I saw like vouchers as something that could be like manipulated politically by teachers unions. Like it actually opened a door for teachers unions to be able to get control over private schools too, if so-called public money was being sent to private institutions, which is apparently one of the scariest things in the world. Even though, you know, nobody minds when it's defense contractors or pharmaceutical companies or any of these other things. But if, my God, if it's private schools.
Geez. Oh, no, a Christian private school has public funds. This is the end of democracy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we dealt with this story around this time last year, Corey DeAngelis and I did, when a Harvard professor talked about banning homeschooling. I can send you the link to that, and I'll put it in the show notes for my show too. But Corey and I did like a two-parter on this, is kind of like trying to set this agenda. And obviously the way that the people in the ivory tower of higher education are going to go after this is like, you know, these kids are, they should be in school being socialized, and they're just in these weird religious environment handling snakes to test their faith or whatever they do. You know, it's stuff like that, like caricatures of religious right or evangelicals. And for people who are so tolerant and so inclusive, it certainly didn't feel that way in their presentation. But they, you know, Corey made such a stink about it that they actually wound up having like a panel debate with my friend and somebody who I've collaborated with several times, Carrie McDonald, and a couple of people who the professor who wrote this thing for Harvard Law, and another person who was kind of on her side as well. So it got the conversation going. This woman who tried to do this, this Harvard Law professor, actually did a good thing for like the free school home education kind of movement. But what I've realized through the years is there's just like numerous fronts that this battle can take place on. And what I saw as my role, like I said, even though I would give a platform to anybody who wants to talk about any part of this, any part of changing the status quo, what does real education look like? Who is doing a kind of authentic or self-directed education? What models work? What does real learning look like? What are the important things to learn? And trying to, in the School Sucks Project, actually create a picture, a kind of comprehensive picture of alternative education, right? Without saying like, the political stuff just isn't super interesting, and maybe I'm, you know, cynical. I don't see how that control is given up, but I might not see that because I don't look for that, you know? So like, you might be informed about things that I'm just not informed about as far as like what might be possible. I see a lot of people doing really good work, like I said, on a variety of fronts in the, you know, battle for more educational freedom, but I've kind of, carved out my own little world that I inhabit mostly.
You know, obviously I don't have all the answers, and I'm betting you know a lot more than me. You know, again, I am just, like you said, getting started in all this. And that's part of, again, why I bring people on the show and make these connections, is because I know there's a lot of different people who know different things and have different viewpoints for me to learn from. Something there where you said, you know, maybe you just don't see it. There's a quote from a villain in the animated series, The Legend of Korra. I'm kind of a big nerd, just open about that. But it's really cool because his whole arc in the season is him trying to bring about anarchy in the world because he thinks that's the right political thing to do, and he thinks that'll bring balance or whatever. Interesting character, but he gives a cool quote where he says, "When you base your expectations only on what you see, you blind yourselves to the possibilities of a new reality." And so I think what, again, not claiming to have all the answers at the moment, but I think something that will bring movement and momentum to, again, freeing up education and helping to liberate people is to visualize what a free market, like a true free market. I'm not talking about vouchers or, again, school choice, but like a completely free market, what that would look like. I actually created a model for what that would look like. Again, just an estimation of some of the things that people need to take into consideration. Is there a way to screen share here?
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So this is the free enterprise education model. And so again, prior to delving into this, the reason I bring it up is I think if people can see what was really possible, that they could get excited and get behind that. If they're willing to, because again, all we know is this, again, this K-12 university style where you get the diploma, you get the degree, you know, you go to school August to May from, you know, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And I think people need to see what it could be like without that. Because if we were to create a vacuum, what would fill that in from free market forces? So we'll start here at the top, this free enterprise education model.
By the way, I just want to say really quickly, I will include this. Actually, I'll screenshot it. Actually, can you send this to me, this image, so I can make it the cover art for the show, and I can also include it in my show notes so people can see what we're talking about.
Yeah, I can do that.
All right.
The first thing that people need to think about, I think, is the removal of some of the norms that currently exist that they, I guess, just supposed would exist, but there would be no reason for them to exist in a free market system. So this yearly orientation thing, this hourly orientation, again, August to May, 8 to 3 p.m. There's no standard curriculum. There's no K-12 grades. I know John Taylor Gatto and others have talked about, you know, the arbitrariness of grouping kids together exclusively based on their age, how there's nothing like that in the real world, and how, so all this is removed. So, and a lot of times when I talk about this with people, they say, okay, well, if the government's not in charge of education, who's in charge of education? And I see where they're going, but I think the question they need to be asking is, what are people's needs and how are they fulfilled? For example, if you ask who's in charge of food in America, well, there's not a person, there's not a council. Different people have different needs, and the market offers them different solutions, and people make choices, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But what that does is provide variety and different varying qualities, and people are free to pursue those, again, food solutions. Mm-hmm. So I think in a free market where employers now currently look, not exclusively, but in large part, they look at degrees as a metric for who they're going to even consider giving the time of day to interview for jobs. If there's no more high school diplomas, and if, you know, university college attendance goes down significantly, because again, no one's getting loans except from private businesses. And the only people who are going to be doing that are people who really need the higher training, you know, doctors, lawyers, engineers, et cetera. Because imagine going in to get a loan for college and the person says, okay, what are you doing? I don't know. Can I get $2,000?
Yeah.
No. So employers are going to be looking at, what metric are we going to rely on now to filter people? And they're going to, it's probably going to be mostly skills. And because there's a mutual need for that exchange of information, because people would say, well, how do you know how you would become a doctor in this new system? I say, well, how do you know how to become a doctor now? I don't know personally, but I know you can go look it up. You can research, you can talk to people, and you can figure it out. That information's there. So essentially parents will, help their children again with the aids of others if they want to, tutors, teachers, other people who, you know, are publicly outspoken about the issues, can give that information of what children need. Everyone knows that their child needs to learn how to read, how to write, how to do basic math. But a lot of schools taking up children's time where with things that they'll never need if they even learned it in the first place. And a lot of that time will be freed up for them to search and to learn on their own, a lot of self-direction. So you got to look at what solutions people would provide. And so that's what this chart is kind of showing. There's online school. Again, most of what they're actually currently teaching in school, you can find for free, if not cheap, online already. So it's not a question of can people afford it? It's there. Home education. And again, there's no one way to do this. Just like homeschooling, there's no one way to homeschool. People would take and sample from different things. Private schools would look completely different from what we understand. You know, again, we think of school being that 8 to 3, August to May. But for example, maybe your kid already knows how to read and write and, I don't know, taking an interest in history. So you go to the local school and they have a menu where you can pick from classes. Let's say you even want to take 3 classes and they have a discount, you know, we'll give you a cheaper per class cost if you sign up for 3 classes instead of the idea of signing up for a whole year in tuition and that kind of traditional thing. It might still be available, but I think a lot less people would be interested in paying that money for things that their kids aren't interested in, won't use. There'll be a lot more, I think, people training directly in professions and trades. Whereas now, you know, people talk about we need more trade training and stuff like that. But the truth is, Johnny, at the end of the day, when he has, you know, 5 papers to do for biology and for European history. When he gets done with all that, he's exhausted and frankly doesn't care. Or it's hard for him to care. And if he does, then it's hard for him to fit it in with traditional stuff. So I think we'll see a boom in that. I think we'll see the invention of new things like a teacher or a tutor Uber kind of service. You know, people said you can't just hire a stranger to come to your house and pick you up in their car and take you somewhere. Someone did it. You can't just let strangers stay in your house and call it a business. Airbnb did it. So I think we'll see innovations and things like that. And then with higher education, again, employers are looking for skills. People won't need to waste their time with degrees unless, again, they need some kind of certification. And I think free market solutions will offer that and through kind of a reform of the current system. And that's just, a brief overview of how I think the free market forces would fill that vacuum.
Do you worry about, again, after the year we just lived through, I think it's a fair question, like a kind of giant coming in and, like I'm real down on the whole corporate scene after, you know, what I've seen since this time last year with how they've responded to various, political and cultural pressures in this country, let's just say. So mm-hmm. I went to a gym for a long time, had one location. They have a sign up that says, "We're staying open no matter what the governor says." Mm-hmm. Love this place, right? This is great. But if LA Fitness wanted to come into that town and put them out of business, they could, you know, in a minute. And that might happen eventually. And that's a shame. So, it was definitely the year of the giants as far as, corporations go. And we also see that... And just look down in any like big business that you're in and there's stickers on the floor telling you where to stand. It's very dystopian as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know if at this point, just like from what I've seen, like how I see how the state, as long as it exists, has the power to hand resources to these giant corporations that pay for the use of that power to transfer these resources. Does the little guy stand a chance in this kind of emerging system? Now, this is not cynicism, right? These are questions that I would like to get answered. And, you know, I'm in a crowd of people where it's like, look, if I'm going to learn what I want. My kids are going to learn what they want, and we'll figure out how to get them where we need to go. But what you've done from the other end is really, really important because you need something like as a bridge to show people who say, look, it's kind of like the quote you used, right? What was it called again?
So the character was Zaheer from the animated series, The Legend of Korra.
That is a wonderful quote. I try to, without having known that quote, kind of build that into a lot of what I do, which is like, you can't just say school sucks if you don't have any alternatives to show people, right? Mm-hmm. So what, and I remember too, when I started interviewing people who did like self-directed learning centers, I remember one of my lines was parents like a building. Right? Parents like a building where their kids can go. That's what they're used to. So your bridge is like, you guys all know about a system, right? You all went through a system. You put your kids through a system. Here is an alternative or potentially a replacement or something that at first could exist alongside that system for people who want it. And I think that's really useful. My peers have mostly just turned their back on that system as it exists entirely, whether it's, you know, for themselves or for their families, like they're not going. So yeah, I think this is really, really useful. And I kind of bring up like my frustrating past like 12 to 14 months of observing these multinational giant corporations, their behavior, their politics, and saying, geez, you know, if education was entirely turned over to the free market, does it just get eaten by these people? You know, or not even people. Does it just get eaten by these forces? And that would be a shame. And I'd like to have really good answers to that question, how that doesn't happen. And I don't have them right now. So, I bring that up just as like, I would get this out there. I would talk to people about this. I would put this in front of critics. I would put this in front of supporters of the current system and say, you know, push on this, poke holes in this. And what you have so far here is phenomenal. Put it to the test. You know, make it sharper, build it out, talk to people. Like you could build 2 years of content around this thing, just going like section by section and, you know, talking to home educators, talking to tutors, talking to tutoring centers, talking to people who run private schools or online schools, or people who are just complete autodidacts, like total self-directed learners, people who do online courses. There's so many people that you could interview and you could build a comprehensive picture with a lot of detail, as you know, audio and video content. So I think that this is a wonderful place to start. Why didn't I think of this 12 years ago? I'm glad you did, because we need it now. I'll tell you that. But I've got, maybe I could push like an extra 15 more minutes, if that would work, if you want to talk about Gatto a little bit. And if we can't do everything that you wanted to do with Gatto, let's just do a part two.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. So what about Gatto specifically did you want to cover?
I wanted to cover the seven lesson teacher, because again, a lot of times people like you and I and others in this field, we talk about those, the kind of the system that kills creativity and individuality. You know, people hear these kind of things, but Gatto's seven lesson teacher really talks and really kind of points to the principles and the causation of those things. So I think if we talk about that, people will have a little bit more understanding of the, is it kind of just kids, you know, hate school and they hate, you know, doing their homework, and is their creativity and their individuality and those things really being killed, or is it just something that's boring and so we're looking for anything to attack about it? So I think delving into the seven lesson teacher, what that is, will help people maybe get a more complete picture.
Yeah. How did you encounter it, and what were like your big takeaways once you read through it?
You know, I'm not 100% sure how I started reading Gatto. You know, I've been researching education, so maybe I just found it online, you know, someone, you know, posting about a book, or maybe my first guest, Alex Newman, might have recommended Gatto. Yeah. Not sure, to be honest. But I've read his Dumbing Us Down, Weapons of Mass Instruction. And I read the volume one of The Underground History of American Education. They haven't come out with, I wasn't able to find like a full book. I only found volume one, and they don't have volume two available, or three.
I know. I need volume two to come out because I wrote the foreword for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I need to start. I want it to come out. I want a physical copy of it. I want to carry it around with me.
See, I found like the original book online, the whole thing, but like to find it from someone, it's not like just sold like a regular item. It's, you know, sold pre-owned, and, you know, people are selling it for like hundreds of dollars because, you know, it's hard. You can't get it. And so, yeah. Of course, I haven't bought it.
There's also a crap. What is it called? There is like this radio show where this woman, I think her name is Lynn Geary, something Minds or something Interruption. It's on the tip of my tongue what her show is called. They did an audiobook version of it. It's not great, you know. It's not Orson Welles reading it, but it's the whole book. And it's very transportable. You know, you can take it to the gym, you can take it for a walk, and you can get through it. But I will find that and provide a link to this radio, or maybe it was even like an online media project that created an audiobook version of The Underground History of American Education. Of course, I have a video series. I don't know if you've ever seen those.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought it up with you, because when I was looking to see what we could talk about, I saw on your YouTube channel, like, oh, he knows John Taylor Gatto, you know, and that's something we can start with.
Yeah, yeah. Those videos, very shareable for the skeptic, by the way. Mm-hmm. They're short, like 5, 6, 7 minutes.
Before we get into the actual seven lesson teacher, I want people to know who John Taylor Gatto is, because from what I recall, he's like an outstanding guy. If I recall, he was working with like TVs and TV ads and stuff like that. And this is what I recall from one of the book intros, where he basically said, like, what am I doing with my life? I want to do something. He just like one day, you know, was like, I need to do something, you know, make a difference, and got into teaching and became a teacher of the year twice in the state of New York. And then because he saw such problems with the system, he's like, well, I quit, because I'm not going to be a part of this anymore.
He was a man who went into it, yeah, a little bit later in life, and from his background, he certainly understood influence. He is actually from where I am right now, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And Monongahela.
Monongahela, yeah, which is maybe 30 minutes up the river. But this Western Pennsylvania area produces a lot of quality kind of salt of the earth people, and John was definitely one of them. I never got to meet him. My good friend Richard Grove did a documentary about him, I think in 2011, called The Ultimate History Lesson. It was about 5 hours long, and he just interviewed John in his living room. And Rich became close with him. He knew him until he died a couple years ago. We, a group of us, were actually in his New York apartment in December, I think it was. We went down there to collect all of his books before they were taken to like a thrift store or the junkyard. So I handled his entire book collection, loaded it into a U-Haul truck, and brought it up to Connecticut, where now it sits safely in storage. So that's pretty cool. But while he is this highly acclaimed teacher, he writes this op-ed for the Wall Street Journal called "I Quit, I Think."
I think.
Yeah. And he just blows the whole thing up. And, you know, that kind of launched his career as, you know, a public school historian. And you can't be a public school historian without being a public school critic, which he was also very qualified to do by however long his teaching career was. And we all stood on his shoulders, you know, like to think about him doing a lot of the research that he did for his books. Beyond his own experience, like in the 80s or the 90s, actually having to pick up the phone and call, you know, Harvard University or Yale, does this book exist? Do you have this paper? Did this guy ever work here? Can I get his collection of papers? Just amazing efforts that he undertook to write those books. And when I started doing what I did in 2009, that was hugely beneficial to me. In fact, I never interviewed him, and I actually held off on talking about him as long as I could, which I think was about 20 episodes before maybe I even mentioned him. And the reason why is because I knew it would just kind of become the John Taylor Gatto show if I let it, because I could just lean on him for all the answers, all the criticisms, all the history. And I've probably said on School Sucks Podcast, including this time, the underground history of American education. I don't know. What have I done? 700 and some odd episodes.
Wow.
I probably said that 1,500 times. I probably listed that book 1,500 times. So, and it's just one of his books, you know? This one that we're talking about is another one. So I would say that's his background. I would say politically, he was, you know, blue collar. I'll use salt of the earth again. Many like conservative, libertarian kinds of leanings. And that, I think, informed his perspective on the schools. He was a very effective critic of the progressive era and the consequences of that progressive era on the 20th century in this country. As far as what I've done with School Sucks Project, he's the man. He's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have time to talk about the seven lesson teacher, or should we save that for another time?
Let's save it. Let's do a whole show about it.
Alrighty.
How about that? You want to reconvene maybe like in a couple weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. I would really look forward to that. This was a great conversation, and I want to, you know, we have a pretty decent size audience here, so I would like to help get people learning about you and following you. So what are you going to do on Instagram?
So see, the thing is, previously I've been switching back and forth between like a, just like kind of a personal use and then for the podcast, because I've been just doing it 6 months and I haven't been putting in as much elbow grease as I should have. But now that I'm going to start putting in a little bit more work, I'm going to see if I can't start monetizing soon, even if it's not a lot marketing. I'm going to again start putting work into it. So I'll probably just put clips from the show, memes, just kind of content for the show is what I'm going to start doing.
Do memes, you know?
I love memes. I have a meme making app, and I mean, it's a real effective way to communicate an idea very quickly. And people, if you do it right, people love them.
Yep. You're totally right. And I heard you say the same thing. I think you said it to Brian Kaplan when I was listening to that episode that you were a meme guy, and you can do well on Instagram. It's one of my frustrations. You know, the medium is the message. You have to understand that. And I would always get mad when I would put like 9 or 10 hours into one podcast, post about the podcast, and it would get 15 likes. And then I would literally screenshot somebody else's meme, post it on Instagram, and it would get 120 likes. That seemed unfair to me, but you know what? Life isn't fair. And that's what Instagram is for. And if you love memes, Instagram is definitely a place to do well. So I've actually tried to rethink how I could promote School Sucks with more memeing on Instagram instead of just like, oh, here's my next show and here's a video of me talking to a cat.
later I can message you and tell you about like the apps I use and the stuff I use to make it. Cause I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of time. And
yeah, well, I'm into that. I bet I'd be good at it.
I bet you would too.
I've made a few. So yeah, let's do that. But yeah, we'll reconvene. We'll do the 7 lesson school teacher. And if I could just plug for your audience, my website, schoolsucksproject.com. I think my Instagram is the same. And our YouTube channel is School Sucks Podcast. There's a video series there since we just scratched the surface on Gatto called The Underground History of American Education. It is a documentary length playlist. It's about an hour and a half. It is 15 vignettes from The Underground History of American Education, which I've now said 1,502 times on School Sucks. I highly recommend watching those videos, sharing those videos. You can learn a lot. It's me reading Gatto and trying to create kind of like fast-paced video coverage of his writing. So I recommend people go and check that out. And can you just give your links for my folks?
Let's see. I think if you just look up The Noah Blaylock Show, it should be the first result on Buzzsprout. It's available on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and most of the major podcast platforms. So,
well, thank you so much for this great discussion, and thanks for reaching out to me, and we'll do it again soon.
Awesome. Someday I'm drifting away from the madness of the crowd. There'll be one less sound. Someday I'm drifting away like wind through the shrouds and the fields of red clouds.
As a ghost but never seen, start to turn from gray to green.